In our day and age, we isolate ourselves from history. Anything that happened before World War II might as well have never occurred. The problem that naturally comes from this is that the social vocabulary that our civilization has to understand the issues that we're facing now, or will face in the future, is quite limited. For example, we're ruled by a social class, which I have said in previous videos, effectively worships the religion of progress. They hold progress in such esteem, since if you only look at recent historical periods, progress seems obvious. One of the ideas that I've recently come to terms with is that everywhere on this earth has been a video game map where the game has been playing forever. Even in areas that were formed as civilizations relatively recently, like America, where the Europeans only showed up a few hundred years ago, the native tribes have been fighting for millennia beforehand, coloring the hills red in their tribal warfare, which often kills 40% of the male population each generation. Once I learned that the reason birds sing is to announce their presence to mates and to mark their territory against competitors, the world suddenly seemed really different. The thing is that once you get earlier in time than our current modern era, you find vast population collapses are pretty common. Even if you just go back to the 17th century, which isn't that far by historic standards, some historians think the world's population collapsed by one third. The known world's population crashed by half in the 14th or 6th centuries. You find that the world's population crashing by one third happens pretty frequently over history, or realistically, roughly every 300 years. You can find even more horrible examples from time if you want to scroll through history, like the Native Americans losing 90% of their population to European colonialism, or the genocide of 90% of the native population of Northern Europe during the Aryan conquests 4,000 years ago. I've been wanting to make a video on the history of population collapse for a very long time now. The scary thing now is that there's no way to avoid the coming population crash of the 21st century. In sheer numbers, this population crash will be easily 10 times the size of any of the previous ones in history. The thing is that this sounds impossible and overly dramatic, but the reality is that there's no way this can't happen. Looking at statistics, it is physically impossible that the world's population in 2100 is not at least half of what it is now, or collapses to one-third or even less of the current rate are pretty possible. That's big talk, but let me back it up. There's a random guy in Denmark who believes that we can save our civilization from destruction by developing an incentive system that encourages structural changes against corruption. He's created a mathematical algorithm that scores organizations based on how corrupt they are. He's a What If Altist fan and shown me his algorithms. And this stuff is super cool, and you guys should check it out. And we live in an age in which corruption is increasing, and I think something like this is necessary. We just have to reward organizations with good scores by buying their products or voting for them, because if we do that to all organizations so they compete with a good score, and how you get a good score from the algorithm, and that's by implementing structural change against corruption. We already do this for ESG, so why not for something different? More than 7,000 organizations have been analyzed already. The name of the tool is MyStick, and you can use it for free. MyStick has one downside. It can only work when a lot of people use it. Its creator already knows this, but he sponsored this video anyway because he believes that your hands and a stick are enough to get the snowball rolling. So grab my stick and let's hit. Part 1. A Childless Future. For every 100 Koreans alive today, there will be 4 at the end of this century. The thing is that those are the trajectories now. The scary thing as well is that the numbers have continually gone down faster than we expected for the last 50 years. The birth rate has been crashing faster than any computer model has been able to predict before. This sort of thing is statistically incredibly rare and means that some underlying assumption of our worldview is wrong. That's very scary. I would recommend reading the book Empty Planet by Bricker and Ibbotson. Davidson. It covers the entire world and what their population collapse is looking like. The scary thing is that this trend is hitting every single population in the world, and as said before, is occurring obscenely quickly. For example, just 15 years ago, almost all countries in the world had sustainable birth rates, including America. Now, almost no countries, including in places like India, Latin America, Southeast Asia, or the Middle East, have stable birth rates. The only large place with a replaceable birth rate is Africa at this point. The other thing is that these numbers are going down so quickly, even in the poorest African countries, that I expect in 15 years, at the current levels, no countries in the world will have stable birth rates. The other horrifying thing is these numbers aren't stabilizing anywhere. In the countries where they're lowest, like Confucian East Asia, they just keep on crashing continuously. In Korea or China, they're currently at a quarter of what sustainable rates would be. These statistics result in absurd situations. For example, last year, the nation of Ethiopia had nearly as many babies born as the entire European Union combined. 20 years down the road, what kind of world does that create? The shocking thing as well is that this is an issue that the major governments of the developed world haven't really been able to recognize at all. Like, it's absolutely absurd. For most countries in the developed world, this is basically national extinction, but their politicians argue over minutiae, like whether there are 64 genders or giving aid money to some far-off foreign war in a different continent. I think a lot of people don't treat this as real. The modern world changes so quickly that it's easy to think that some breakthrough will occur that will result in us being able to escape these intractable demographic issues. The scary thing, though, is that the birth rate has kept declining for over a century, with a short hiccup with the baby boomers. Even if we theoretically had a baby boom now, it wouldn't be enough to offset the decline, and at most, it would push this crisis back another generation. 30 years in historic terms isn't that much. When you see these crashing birth rates, keep in mind that this is the future. There will come a time when that ever-shrinking number is our entire society. Hey everybody, please humor me for a shameless plug, where I have started a new podcast called History 102 on a separate channel, and I have conversations with Eric Torenberg, where I explain different historic periods over the course of an hour, and we cover topics like the Spanish Empire, the fall of Rome, World War II, and so many others. And our goal is to cover all of history, so if you want to learn history quickly and in a fun conversational way, check out my channel History 102. Back to the video. Part 2. Cities versus countryside. Something like this has never happened at this scale before in human history. Although there have been parallels on smaller scales, I've talked about this in many previous videos, and notably the one about decadence. Decadence is a normal historic process that occurs in every major civilization, whether the Greeks, Romans, Indians, Muslims, Chinese, or 18th century Europe. Authors since the Bible or Herodotus have been writing about decadence. It involves the breakdown of shared values, intellectual honesty, ability to fight, unity between the classes, or the society's ability to function on any given level. Decadence is caused by societies becoming so wealthy that people don't need to struggle to improve themselves, so the society grows weak. Crashes in birth rates are a universal symptom of decadence. When Will Durant, one of the greatest historians ever, was asked what was the thing that killed the Greeks or Romans, he said it was a collapsing birth rate. Islam, 1,000 years ago, was a secular, urban, scientific society, and then those people had no kids. The Turkish barbarians and religious fundamentalists succeeded in Islam, and Islam has been incredibly religious for the 1,000 years since as a reaction against this. Emperor Augustus's Rome was panicking as the Roman elite weren't breeding, as the government created policies to encourage the birth rate. In 19th century France, the first people in Europe to secularize, they saw their birth rate crash, which resulted in the British and the Germans outcompeting them over the next century. My researcher a couple years ago did a project in the factors which promulgate in having a stable birth rate. He found that it was predicted by two things. Every society with these two factors will have a stable birth rate, and any society that does not have them won't. If a society is rural and religious, it will have a stable birth rate. If it's secular or urban, it won't. The thing is, every rural society in history is religious, and every urban society is secular. So really, we're looking at the same factor. A rural society will survive, while urban ones ones won't. This is a pattern which has followed for all of history. In the ancient or medieval worlds, the cities couldn't reproduce while the countryside did. For example, the cities of Italy in the 1st century BC were majority Middle Eastern ancestry, while the countryside was ethnically Italian. Modern Italians have almost no Middle Eastern ancestry since the cities didn't reproduce. Constantinople, once it became a city-state that lost its hinterland with the Byzantine Empire, really fell apart as a society, since even in the Middle Ages, a city was a demographic sink, which was dependent upon the countryside to reproduce. This also holds for religion. Greco-Roman civilization was one of the most agnostic of the pre-modern world, since its elites were urban. The Middle Ages were a much more complicated society than we give them credit for, and even back then, the cities had a reputation for agnosticism, or not being a good place to raise a family. The British elite stayed religious over the 18th and 19th centuries, while France went agnostic, since the British elite was rural and the French was urban. Once Britain became an urban society in the mid-19th century, it stopped being religious. These trends do take a few generations to play out. For example, the Middle East urbanized in the late 20th century, and devotion to Islam has been in a nosedive over the last decade. Fun side note, I've seen a lot of analysts say that the rise of TikTok is the thing which is destroying faith in Islam today. In rural communities, human societies operate largely under Dunbar's number of 130, which is the number of people the human brain can process and actually know their character. Dunbar's number is fascinating in that the average size of a corporation, a church, a Roman centurion, a military brigade, or almost all types of human organization cluster around 130 people, or Dunbar's number. The thing is, once you get past Dunbar's number, the society can't assess the moral level of people or police their actions socially. In a farming town in 19th century America, a medieval village, a village in the ancient Middle East, or rural India today, everyone knows everyone else. A woman can't get pregnant with the children of multiple men without social recriminations and shaming. A scam artist or habitual criminal will eventually have their reputation destroyed. The governance, although this system does have very obvious negatives, is done by a local feudal lord, village elders, or parish priest who know the characters of everyone involved. Once you get larger than that, it's impossible to police people's actions. This either makes it difficult to get people to cooperate in tragedy of the commons situations, like waging war, maintaining social standards, or social trust. Furthermore, everything becomes lonelier and more difficult since you can't rely on communities. It also wouldn't surprise me if we evolved to have a switch to not breed when population density gets too high for obvious reasons. Pre-industrial societies largely got around these issues since the populations of cities weren't replaceable, thus most of the inhabitants of cities were people socialized and from the countryside. So if you want to look at demographics and social structure from the perspective of cities versus countryside, you would see that in the pre-industrial world, the demographics of every developed society in the world were 90% rural and 10% urban. The sort of society that this would create would be a large religious, rural majority population that would provide social stability, but was also credulous, simple-minded, and bigoted. The thing is that we humans didn't evolve to live in cities. We are biologically the exact same as the hunter-gatherers who lived 100,000 years ago, who lived in intact small tribal communities where they would probably never see more than 300 people in their whole lives. Majority urban societies are incredibly recent, with the first ever being Britain in 1850. This is also why social study after social study keeps on finding that the strength of social bonds and community are so important to health and happiness. When humans were evolving, if you weren't part of a good tribe, you'd just die, so our brains exist to prioritize community. Then, over the pre-industrial world, you had the 10% who lived in cities and were generating new ideas. This 10% in certain societies were able to create more agnostic social structures as they had disproportionate power. This would be especially true in societies where the farmers lived inside the town and worked in the fields outside town. That would explain the free thinking of city-state cultures like ancient Greece or the Italian Renaissance, where the farmers were also town dwellers, thus blurring the lines between city and countryside. As well as this, in societies where there was a centralized urban elite, like the European Enlightenment, Sung China, or the Islamic Golden Age, you saw similar results. These would be aberrations against the norm of stable religious conservatism, where the rural 90% would dominate the culture. This 90% would create a general level of social stability so that the periodic rebellions of the urban 10% wouldn't destroy the culture. On the other hand, the demographic demographics of the industrial world are largely 90% urban and 10% rural, or ironically the direct inversion of agrarian pre-industrial demographic norms. What would a society with the opposite social structure look like? Rather than religious conservatism being the norm, agnostic urbanity is. This would create a society that would be remarkably creative in the short term. However, it would be incapable of reproducing and would also lose the ability to maintain any social standards. For a few generations, said society would see the most rapid progress in human history. Then, after the social traditions and standards of the agrarian era would erode, you would see complete civilizational collapse. The birth rate wouldn't be able to sustain itself and the society would crash into complete decadence. Keep in mind, in pre-industrial societies, which were 90% rural, such as the Roman Empire, Abbasid Islam, Babylon, L'Ancien Régime France, or Sung China, faced really bad decadence. So what would the decadence of a 90% urban society where no one's scared of starving look like? You would see a breakdown of law and order, the formation of families, the ability to wage war, traditional belief structures, and basically any form of group cooperation. This is literally what's happening to our society. The most advanced nations in the world are pushing degrowth. I have no idea how defund the police helps black people, who often live in dangerous places, who really do need the police. Furthermore, how defund the police's policies have been pushed in countries that don't really have black people or well-armed polices, such as Australia, North Europe, or East Asia. However, for the comfortable city dwellers who want to abdicate any social standards, getting rid of the police means there's no external standards that they can be forcibly held to. Oswald Spengler was a brilliant historical thinker who developed a theory of how civilizations rise and fall. One of the most important points of his work, and a point he kept on returning back to, is that once a population becomes urbanized, it loses the character and soul which made that civilization. The soul of the civilization comes from the earth and nature around which it formed. As the society removes itself from the land, it can apply itself on a larger scale, but it becomes mechanical and artificial. That artificiality isn't sustainable, and then the civilization goes into decline. The great depressing irony is that looking at the strengths and weaknesses of urban or rural societies over history, you can see that our reality perfectly matches the hypothetical scenario. We are a majority urban society, which after its brief burst of incredible growth, is now seeing its population and social collapse. Part 3, Mouse Utopia. I'm going to keep this section short since I've already made a long video detailing it in much greater depth. Ironically, a very large part of this channel has spent dozens of hours basically detailing different angles of two different crises we are facing as a world or civilization today. The first of which is the political crisis, or why I think America and much of the rest of the world are on the verge of a major war or political collapse. Then there is the demographic collapse, which we will see play out for the rest of this century, which is attached to psychological issues. I've called this the psychological Black Death in previous videos. It's easy to forget that these two independent crises, which I believe would happen without the other, are hitting us at the same time. Mouse Utopia was an experiment in the 60s and 70s where they put 9 mice into a cage that could hold 6,000 mice. They gave them perfect conditions for population growth. There was infinite food, a lot of space, no disease, and a good climate. They ran this experiment 30 times and got the same results for each time. The population skyrocketed to 2,000, which is, again, 1/3 of the carrying capacity, and then the mouse social structure broke down. The male mice became effeminate while the female mice became masculine. The mice stopped interacting socially, with a lot becoming autistic. The mouse social system totally broke down, as there were gangs of violent mice who would kill those who continued to breed. The mouse birth rate crashed precipitously, as each time the mouse colony completely died out. Doesn't this sound eerily similar to what's going on in our world? The Mouse Utopia experiment has haunted me ever since I read it. I know it's possible to discount an experiment run by some guy in the 60s, but the thing is that this is the only paradigm that explains a lot of the weirdness of our society. We are the first era in history which wants to commit civilizational suicide. The first era where the birth rate has crashed to the degree it has. A large part of the West is literally pushed pushing degrowth and mass immigration for the literal purpose of replacing the current population. We are the society which has the strongest feminism and most effeminate men ever. Nothing like it has been seen before in history, but it can all be explained by mass utopia. I was watching my friend Homath's YouTube channel, and he showed a video of how in Korea, they have something called the 4B movement. What that effectively means is that Korean women will stop having children, any kind of relationships, speaking with, or sex with men. This is terrifying because it just proves the mouse utopia paradigm. Only through mouse utopia can you explain a population which has lost any desire to reproduce, or who view reproduction as disgusting. Another scary thing is that the American girl who made a TikTok explaining this approved of the 4Bs and was cheering on Korean women for ending their entire nation. I assess the accuracy of my predictions every few years to compare what I thought would happen to reality. I find I had a bias against nihilism, and that I did not predict accurately how suicidally nihilistic our society or the lefts would get. The 4Bs was something once I knew about the mouse utopia experiment that I knew in the back of my mind I would start seeing. It's shocking to actually get there, though. I put it in the same mental bracket as the hikikomori or the Japanese shut-ins who refused to work, socialize, or be members of society. I predicted there would be a Western version, and now we have the NEETs, which stands for Not in Employment, Training, or Education. The thing that scares me about mouse utopia is that it's the perfect logical endpoint of the chain of argument I went through before, of what a majority urban population would end up like. The guy who ran the mouse utopia experiment, after running various versions of it 30 times, came to the conclusion that the driving variable for mouse utopia was the crowding and thus lack of agency which came from overpopulation. A very similar conclusion to the Unabomber, who said that the great flaw of the Industrial Revolution was that it removed agency so much from the average person that society lost any will to keep going. That the human spirit couldn't take being turned into a cog or an ant in a giant depersonalized hill. The Unabomber also said that without intervention from genetic engineering, that industrial civilization would break down. He said that collapsing birth rates, ennui, soullessness, and other things would mean that the industrialized world would self-destruct over the course of the 21st century. This fits with the rural thesis in that in a rural society where you know everyone, you can feel agency over your life since you are capable of seeing how you as an individual have improved your community over the course of your life. That's much more difficult in a giant depersonalized bureaucracy. The thing that scares me about this is it's yet another logical argument that comes from a different direction that says basically the same thing as the mouse utopia or decadence argument, that the industrial urban nature of modern civilization creates a lack of social standards or cultural unity which results in demographic collapse. The thing is, we can't ignore this anymore as the birth rate keeps on plummeting to lower and lower levels. Part 4. What does this all mean? We can talk about these statistical projections all we want, but the fundamental reality is that this won't happen in the lab, but in the messy real world. There's an interesting book named The Human Tide by Paul Moreland. It's a history of how the various demographic waves of the last 200 years have affected history. It goes through how the Anglo and French population booms of the early 19th century resulted in the settlement of the Anglosphere, the Industrial Revolution, or Napoleonic Wars. Then the population boom in East and Central Europe caused the world wars. The population boom in East Asia resulted in the tiger economies of the mid to late 20th century, while the population boost of the early 21st and late 20th centuries resulted in the wave of Islamic radicalism, migration, and terrorism which rocked across the Middle East. Now the population boom in Africa will probably result in mass immigration or wars. We treat history as a war of ideas or politics, but the reality is it's often a battle of dominance between different ethnic groups of people. When one group has a lot of people, they go out and conquer, using politics to rationalize it. When a population goes into decline and they shrink into conservatism and then use politics to rationalize that again. This will happen in our world as well. It's hard to draw conclusions of the demographic future of our world. For example, one would think the demographic rise of Africa recently will result in important events on that continent. For example, the population of Africa has grown 5 times over since 1950. It's expected to quadruple again by the end of this century. That being said, that's not going to happen since Africa's birth rates are already going down rapidly. Nigeria just can't support 500 million people. That's ridiculous. And frankly, there have been very few historical events noteworthy enough to warrant Africa's population going up by 5 times over in the last 70 years already. Furthermore, the population growth in Africa is contingent on the stability of the rest of the world. In a world where the developed nations will have half the population they do now by the end of the century, Africa will end up having a quarter of its current population. This is since Africa is completely dependent upon the fertilizer, industrial goods, or agriculture in other regions of the world. If you pull one nut out of the African system, the unstable nature of that continent's trade or politics would fall apart, resulting in cumulative collapse. Thus, it may appear as if Africa would benefit in a mouse utopia scenario in abstract, while the reality is it might become one of the hardest hit areas in the world. Peter Zeihan, I believe, does a good job of analyzing what the effects of demographics will be over the next few decades, where he looks at the countries that are hit the hardest, whether Germany or Russia or China, and predicts that they will have serious issues, while countries like India, America, France, or Turkey, who have relatively younger populations, will probably do better. That being said, when people analyze this, they often try to find a single solution, but there really isn't one. For example, you may want to import immigrants that would keep your populace younger, but immigrants themselves have declining population growth, and importing a completely different society into your culture brings its own series of very serious social issues. Meanwhile, for countries that want to maintain their demographic homogeneity, like Japan or South Korea or Bulgaria in Eastern Europe, they're the ones who are getting hit the hardest by aging. Likewise, people might say that white people will go extinct due to population collapse. However, interestingly, white Anglo-Americans stabilize at one of the highest birth rates of anyone in the world. This is due to half of America's population being suburban and a quarter being rural, which is higher than almost any rate in the developed world, which means it stabilizes at higher birth rates. In the next few years, white Americans will start having higher birth rates than Hispanic Americans. Minority populations in the West are urban concentrated, and after a generation, these immigrant populations collapse down to local birth rates. I also think it's likely Western populations will evict recent immigrants. Remember how urban immigrants who made up the majority of the urban population in Rome didn't turn out to be demographically important. Alternately, how people were scared for the waves of immigration around 1900 in America, where people were worried would replace the local Anglo-Saxon population, but that didn't even remotely happen. There's a solid chance that this is cope on my end, but the idea of the end of white majority populations in the West isn't assured in any way. Furthermore, we're seeing birth rate collapses in the populations which supply the immigrants to the Western world, whether Islam or Latin America, both of which either have negative birth rates or will very soon. These countries will run out of people in a few decades as well. This is a crisis which is affecting the whole planet, a crisis which will last a century at least, with large demographic effects, so the end result is in no way assured. If you want to compare it to a previous era of demographic turnover, that being around the era of the fall of Rome, it would be impossible to predict which ethnic groups would end up predominating in certain areas, especially if you want to look at the dark horse victory of the Slavs, who were an unimportant ethnic group for most of the time, or the Arabs' eruption across most of the known world, neither of which would be predictable, and there are loads of events between the fall of Rome and the start of the Middle Ages that would have been impossible to know as that time period started. If the Korean numbers turn out to be true, where there will be 4 people out of the current 100 who make it to the end of this century, then relatively small groups of people alive today will populate the new world that comes out of this. In general, I think those who want to do so will be the ones who inherit the earth, likely the rural and religious. This is almost a white pill that if you decide you want your descendants to make it, they probably will. One of my friends jokes that it's impossible to get an urban atheist to have grandkids. Our enemies are purposely pulling themselves out of the gene pool. The scary thing is that it appears as if the nihilists are the ones who are willing to organize, especially through the government. That's at least what happened in Mouse Utopia. I hope that they don't kill those who try to continue to breed. In my opinion, historians have enough nasty habit of picking some incredibly complicated historic event and then saying whatever the result that came out of that is assured and was destined to happen. I think in retrospect, whoever emerges out of this crisis victorious will be obvious, but it is in no way so now. To look at the Black Death as an example, it hit the Berbers Byzantine Empire in Central Asia harder than other areas. I still have no idea why that's the case. This then created political disturbances in which the Russians were able to colonize a depopulated Central Asia, the collapse of the Mongol Empire, the Maghreb turning Arabic, or the Turkish conquest of Byzantium. You do see demographic crises like this over history, which change politics. For example, there was a version of the Black Death in the 6th century AD, which killed half the population of the civilized empires like the Byzantines or Persians. This then gave the Arabs and Germanic barbarians an advantage, which thus resulted in their greater predominance at the expense of those two previous empires. The thing is that this kind of stuff is very difficult to predict. As a general rule, though, the more religious or rural a population is, the better off it'll be. On top of this, what we would see is that in the short term, third world populations would have an advantage over first world populations, but later on, as the world gets more chaotic, the better organized first world populations might regain that advantage over the third worlders. Also, the more geographically spread out a population is, the better off it is. The death of Anglo-Americans as a society is harder to imagine than the Danes or the Dutch. The Chinese are really harder to kill as a civilization than the Koreans or the Malays. Another variable here is that the areas getting hit the hardest by these demographic collapses are East Asia, but these are ethnically homogenous societies with no one that could replace them. They have no neighbors with stable birth rates either. Something that I'm going to throw out as well is that there are eras of increasing and decreasing complexity over history. India, as an example, is a place which has had very few of that, and so Indian society is ridiculously complex on a religious, political, ethnic, whatever basis. Or the Roman Empire is a great example, where the complex tribal and religious organizations were replaced by Latin Christians in Western Europe. But then the fall of Rome was an era of increasing complexity, in that the French or the Spanish became separate ethnicities. And this time period will be, firstly, a period of removing complexity, where you could see lots of small nations like the Balkans or the Dutch or various Central Asian groups just go extinct. But as society falls apart, you would see breakdowns afterwards. For example, depending on how big this crisis could be, it wouldn't be impossible to see America split up into different ethnic groups, with Californians or Texans becoming distinct, or seeing Australia develop off in its own completely new direction. And I think a major thing that would happen here is the development of new religions and ideologies. As in this world of great suffering, people would need to have some kind of worldview to explain what was happening, and the modern world has none of the intellectual tools to deal with a demographic crisis of this scale, because modernity is predicated upon continuous growth. And so you could see new religions or philosophies divide up the world. Part 5, secular cycles. Something I've spoken about in many previous videos about how historically every 250 years, the world goes through a major global crisis which breaks the previous social structure. The latest version of this was what we call the Era of Revolutions, just the Taiping Rebellion, French Revolution, 1848, and others. Before that was the Wars of Religion in the 1600s, the Black Death, and you can trace it back thousands of years as far as we have records, with a global crisis every 250 years. Happening like clockwork. I won't cover this theory in as much detail here as I have in other videos, since I've already explained large parts of it. Basically, once inequality gets high enough and normal wages get low enough, you've removed any incentive for social cooperation. What eras of peace and stability result in, naturally, is growing population inequality, which through its own strengths results in the collapse of its system. This then results in society spiraling into civil war, external wars, plague, famine, inflation, and other nasty things. All the variables we use to predict these crises have been blaring off right now. We have computer models which predict these kinds of crises dozens of times to the exact years they took place in, based off the variables I mentioned before, such as average wages, income inequality, and competition for good jobs. And these computer models have been saying for 15 years that the 2020s will have a crisis like this. The thing is that for a lot lot of these crises, it's normal for the population to crash. For example, in the crisis of the 17th century, the world's population crashed by a quarter and crashed by half in the 14th century. This is since these crises result in the population growing so high that wages go into decline and there isn't enough to go around for everyone. Thus, you see wars, plagues, and famine lower the population until it reaches a stable level so that you can have another period of growth. I've spoken about this in numerous previous videos, notably this one, about how I believe this is the story of our era. The question I ask in addition to this is, with industrialization and mouse utopia, will the stabilization be worse this time? In physics, for every reaction, there is an equal counter-reaction. Thus, it's feasible to see that we could have a much worse stabilization since the world's population has gone up 10 times over the last 200 years. If our rise was this rapid, could our crash be much greater as well? Something that happened with the invention of agriculture that we found from archaeological records is populations would rapidly skyrocket and then crash and then skyrocket again because the world was still evolving to the agricultural revolution. Whether or not this will happen to us, I really don't know. Who knows what this new world might be like socially or politically? I mean, that's a big purpose of this channel, to tease out potential directions it might take. Just one example is it's hard to imagine democracy surviving an aging population. This is since a small population of young people will have the military force and produce everything. The majority elderly population will vote to take their stuff, which would result in young people mutinying, maybe making a military dictatorship to maintain the dominance of force. Another trend I see happening is decline in technological progress. It's impossible for a population in decline to continue to have technological progress. And the easiest example of this is Europe, which for the 500 years before the world wars experienced incredible technological progress, but then as Europe's population went into decline after the world wars, Europe's technological progress just stopped. And maybe with us discovering technologies like genetic engineering or AI, we need to have that technological decline so that we don't destroy the world order. Whether or not you believe in climate change, if climate change is true, and I don't really know if it is, then the world's population halving is an end to that issue, although in a brutal way. The great lesson of the 20th century was that the West had spent centuries trying to make itself more civilized and humane, but then it descended into complete barbarity, committing horrifying atrocities. And our society puts up this front of being very caring and humane, but there's really nothing backing it up. There's no religion, there's no deep moralization occurring in the society, which means that once things get bad and people get desensitized by population collapse, I think there will be horrible atrocities. I was thinking about what kind of ideology you would use to rationalize mouse utopia, and wokeness is a great example where it supports the destruction of the society in support of free riding because it's pushed by people who don't have children, so they don't have an incentive to push the culture onwards. However, as the birth rate crashes and we have to rebuild the world and the populations, I think that we will see the development of new ideologies and religions to explain what's going on and push good values. And I think that the next century will be a religious golden age for this reason. Around 70,000 years ago, the human population was cut down to a bottleneck of around 6,000 people across the whole world. And this is part of the reason why humans have some of the lowest degree of genetic diversity of any mammal species. But the thing that came with this bottleneck was the cognitive revolution, where humans suddenly gained the ability to think in abstract concepts, have religion, have technology, and that sort of thing. And I do wonder, especially with genetic engineering and the world's population collapsing by so much, will this crisis create the potential for another genetic breakthrough for humanity? Perhaps we'll evolve new psychological abilities as a species through genetic engineering that we couldn't have before. Alternately, family values and religion would have to return as maintaining the birth rate becomes the most important issue in society. On top of this, the religious and rural would inherit the earth since they would be the ones who have children. Imagine 100 different changes like this, most of which I cannot predict. The greatest genius of the early 20th century in no way could have predicted all the changes that would occur over the course of that century. All of this leads to a very different world from where we are today. What would a world where the descendants of the rural and religious populate the earth even look like? I wonder if it would be a new Dark Age, much like the religious fanatics and barbarians inherited the Earth after the fall of Rome or the Bronze Age collapse.
There's an interesting book that I talked about in the Mouse Utopia video called Fitzpatrick's War. Fitzpatrick's War itself is a science fiction novel set in the 25th century about the rise of an American Alexander the Great. However, it has a fascinating backstory, which is that over the course of the 21st century, and this book was written around 1990, the world's population goes up to 11 billion and then crashes down to a billion by the end of the 21st century. And this occurs due to population collapse, due to major diseases, breakdowns in supply chain, and what occurs is that religious fundamentalist rednecks fight a civil war in America against inner city gangs and then burn the cities down, while the Muslims colonize Europe and the Chinese colonize East Asia.
In the book Why Nations Fail, which I'd recommend, one of the themes that gets teased out a lot is that there are certain eras of history in which pivotal small decisions, which the people who make those decisions often don't even think about, determine the fate of centuries. An example of this is the fall of Rome, in which Islamic, Orthodox, and Western civilization formed afterwards, or the discovery of the New World, in which the early colonial structures of the New World determined how those societies operate even today, or with the Black Death, where Western Europe became a free society and Eastern Europe a serf society due to changes made around the Black Death. And this will be a giant historic breaking point. And so the beautiful white pill here is that if we guys can find a way to do things right, we can set our descendants up for a good future because we will be at that pivotal moment of history.